This is Arts Alive for this Saturday, March 26th. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Today, we hear it from so many of the people we interview for Arts Alive. There's something special going on in Los Angeles. No matter what field of the arts you're in, the city is a place to experiment, to find your voice, and find an audience.
LA has this sort of boundless energy about it. There's a huge amount of potential. There's this feeling of excitement that we could almost do anything with the music scene here.
Composer Andrew Norman is following the footsteps of greats like Stravinsky and Schoenberg, continuing the legacy of great music composition in Southern California. Norman helps us inaugurate a new spotlight on local composers here on Arts Alive in a moment. Also on the program today, grab a drink and crack the spine on Huizache, a Texas literary magazine throwing a party in L.A. And on Ask the Dean, what makes an adagio? This is a question for Dean Rob Cudiera of the USC Thornton School of Music. First, here's Alan Chapman with the arts news.
From the Arts Desk today, almost $2 billion budgeted for arts in Canada and Huntington expansion continues. Artists and arts funders are jumping for joy in Canada this week. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has issued his first budget, and in it, he's earmarked $1.9 billion Canadian for the arts and culture sector over the next 5 years. The spending increase means that the Canada Council for the Arts will see its budget double by 2021. The Council's mission is to foster and promote the study and production of artistic works. Their director and CEO called the infusion of cash a game changer, saying we can begin writing a new chapter in the artistic and cultural history of this country. More than $105 million will go to national museums. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation is slated to get an extra $675 million over the next five budgets. But some are questioning if the budget overlooks one branch of the arts. The National Film Board will receive $13.5 million and film funding agency Telefilm Canada $22 million. That's significantly down from the $95 million the Liberal government had promised to spend on both organizations. And the Huntington Library, Art Collections, and Botanical Gardens in San Marino has announced yet another expansion. They're adding nearly 9,000 square feet to the Virginia Steele Scott Galleries of American Art. The $10.3 million project will give the galleries 5,000 more square feet of gallery space and a new, more accessible building entrance. What's being called the Jonathan and Karen Fielding Wing should open in October, with 18th and early 19th century American art on view, including hundreds of pieces from the Fielding's own collection. It's the third expansion to the Huntington Gallery since 2005. That's the arts news for Saturday, March 26th. On this date in 1827, Ludwig van Beethoven died in Vienna at age 56. He'd been bedridden for many months, but he still received visits from friends. And one friend said, "There was a great peal of thunder at the moment of Beethoven's death." For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
This is Arts Alive on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. The range and quality of composers who call Southern California home make this an especially exciting place to be for music lovers. So today on Arts Alive, we kick off a new series dedicated to getting to know local composers.
I love the musical scene here, and I love the vibe it has. LA has this sort of boundless energy about it. There's a huge amount of potential. There's this feeling of excitement that we could almost do anything with the music scene here because there's so much imagination and creativity. I just love it.
We're starting with Andrew Norman, who studied at the USC Thornton School of Music and then decamped to the East Coast for a number of years. Now he's back, not only back in Los Angeles, but back at USC, serving as a composition professor at his alma mater.
Yes, I now am in charge of young composers. It's a little humbling and intimidating to be, you know, like wandering around amidst all my old professors. Now I'm supposed to be one of them. And that's, you know, that's a little bit of a mind game. But I'm gradually getting used to the idea that I'm, you know, in charge of these impressionable young minds and trying to open them up and further them along. You know, teaching composition, I feel like, is all about just trying to help students find their own voice. There's no one way to do it. There's a million ways to do it. And it's all about helping, guiding them toward the things that they naturally do and trying to figure out how to get them to be more of themselves. I see all this creativity, and it comes by me every week, and I get to think about all sorts of cool new things. So I do love teaching.
Norman calls himself a lifelong enthusiast for all things architectural, and that enthusiasm shows in many of his pieces, like Frank's House, a recent work inspired by the home of architect Frank Gehry and premiered by the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra last year while Norman was serving as their composer in residence.
I don't know if any of you have seen this house, but he took a very traditional pink bungalow and then he sort of just deconstructed it and sort of blew it up and used all these very industrial materials to create this sort of shell. I got very interested in the idea of deconstruction. There's an object in my piece, a piece of old music that I've kind of stuck in the middle and that I'm kind of pulling apart. I looked at some Brahms waltzes because to me they sort of represent this whole idea of like 19th century domestic music. I mean, this is music meant to be played at home. It's all about that sort of idea of bourgeois music making. And so I'm kind of using that waltz material as kind of like the object that I'm totally exploding then in the rest of the piece.
The LA Phil named Norman director of their Composer Fellowship Program last year. The year before, they debuted his 20-minute Fantasy for Piano and Orchestra with pianist Emmanuel Ax. The piece shared a bill with Brahms's Piano Concerto No. 2, and Ax had asked Norman to take some inspiration from Brahms for his new work. The result was Release, which the LA Times called a wonderfully fresh way to think, not only about Brahms, but also about where music might be now going. Last year, Alex Ross, the vaunted music critic for The New Yorker, named a recording of Norman's Play by the Boston Modern Orchestra Project to his list of notable albums. The LA Phil took Play Level 1 on their recent European tour. And tonight at the Wallace Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts, in a program called Bridge to Beethoven, violinist Jennifer Coe and pianist Shai Wozner will perform a trio of Norman's works composed as companion pieces to three Beethoven sonatas. We spoke with Coe about her friend Andrew Norman.
Often our conversations are about, even notationally and in terms of sound concept, where is music going? How do we stretch this idea of what musical expression is? I think that's very much what his musical language is.
Violinist Jennifer Coe. Hear her perform works by LA composer Andrew Norman tonight at the Wallace in Beverly Hills. The concert starts at 8. Before the downbeat, Norman talks to our own Alan Chapman in a pre-concert conversation that starts at 7 p.m. Visit thewallace.org for tickets and visit andrewnormanmusic.com for more about Andrew Norman. Listening to Arts Alive here on Classical KUSC. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Next week, we head to the Broad Stage for a Beckett trilogy. That's next Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. Or listen to past episodes of Arts Alive anytime with the Arts Alive podcast. Find it at kusc.org/artsalive. Coming up, a shrub, a literary magazine, and a downtown rooftop. But now, here once again is Alan Chapman with the week's Around Town Arts Calendar.
Here's a bit of what's happening around town, starting as we always do with a free event. The Helsinki-based Sibelius Piano Trio performs music commissioned for the trio and music by, of course, Sibelius, at UCLA's Austin Music Center tomorrow. The concert starts at 5 p.m. and admission is free, but seating is limited. For more information, you can go to music.ucla.edu. Los Angeles Ballet presents Don Quixote, based on Cervantes' iconic novel, and that means gypsies, matadors, and windmills. There's one more performance tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Royce Hall. You can find out more at losangelesballet.org. In his final Keyboard Conversations program of the season, Jeffrey Siegel explores Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition, along with works by Rachmaninoff and Debussy. That Keyboard Conversation concert is 7 p.m. Monday in Palm Desert at the McCallum Theater for the Performing Arts. For details, mccallumtheater.com. And on a personal note, I'm going to be returning to Walt Disney Concert Hall Wednesday evening with another multimedia extravaganza. In this installment of Music 101, I'm going to explore how composers develop and transform their musical ideas. And I'd love to see you there. That's Music 101 at Disney Hall Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. And you'll find your tickets online at laphil.com. And that's a bit of what's happening around town this week. For details on these and other cultural events in Southern California, visit performingartslive.com. For Arts Alive, I'm Alan Chapman.
Coming up, we go slow on Ask the Dean, but first, this week Los Angeles will play host to a national conference of writers, editors, and publishers. And among the highlights of the event in downtown LA will be a celebration of a new literary magazine, which features fiction by and about Latinos, and the general public is invited to the party. We learn more about that from our Arts Alive contributor, Luis Torres.
Someone for everybody.
Popular musician Lisa Flores will begin the festivities at the March 31st event on a restaurant rooftop in downtown LA, right across from the Los Angeles Convention Center, the site of the AWP National Conference. AWP stands for Association of Writers and Writing Programs. Following the music, there will be readings by a number of acclaimed Latino poets and novelists. The event is being held to celebrate a relatively new literary magazine called Huizache. It's a slightly unusual name for a magazine, but as you'll learn in a minute, it's an appropriate title for a literary journal that symbolizes the resilience and beauty of the community it represents. The founder of the magazine is accomplished poet and novelist Dagoberto Gilb, author of several books of fiction and a contributor to such publications as The New Yorker and The Atlantic. Gilb explains the origin of the name of the new Chicano literary journal he founded.
So why Huizache? What is a Huizache? A Huizache is a certain kind of acacia tree that's indigenous and native to Mexico. And even the name is Nahuatl. It happens to kind of grow wild in South and East Texas. It's a sort of a stump, a shrub, I think they call it shrub acacia. So it's not an extremely tall acacia tree, but it has these very thorny growths but unbelievably beautiful yellow flowers.
As writer and editor Dagoberto Gilb explained to the website Latinopia, the Huizache plant is sort of an ugly duckling, and it's considered something of a nuisance to some.
And the really interesting thing about it in Texas in particular, for the farmers and ranchers, they hate the Huizache, which they don't call the Huizache, by the way. They call it a Huizache. The Huizache is irritating to them because they chop one down and three grow up where they chopped it down. And I thought that was exactly who we are. I'm proud of the magazine. We are very beautiful and we thrive.
Beauty, value, resilience, perseverance. just like the Chicano community throughout history, says Dagoberto Gilb. There have been several issues of the Huizache Journal published since it began in 2010, and Gilb says the response has been very positive.
So Huizache began about 5 years ago, and what I decided, you know, given the way my own career evolved, was I decided that we needed a magazine of some status and prestige that would be comparable to, I want to say, the Paris Review. Something that was about us, that was for us.
The Los Angeles Times and other publications have, in fact, compared Huizache favorably to the storied Paris Review, which was founded by, among others, George Plimpton and Peter Matheson.
When you look at literary magazines, generally speaking, let's just say there are 30 selections. And in when you would see the equivalent of the Paris Review or the Epoch or whatever magazine there was, there'd be 30 slots, and maybe there'd be one black person, maybe there would be one Asian person, and maybe there'd be one Latino. And when it came to the West, it would be very much the same thing.
He says the goal was to have a literary journal such as Huizache that pursued diversity, as reflected in its contributors and its content.
And so I decided that at some point, we just had to have a magazine. And that's what Huizache. Huizache is set and about the West, it's for the West, and it's for Latinos.
Dagoberto Gilb, the founder and editor of Huizache, the magazine of Latino literature. Latino literary critic Michael Sedano is among those with high praise for the journal known as Huizache. He tells me the genre began in the early 1960s and has evolved in its breadth and sophistication.
Well, it's gotten to the point where it's no longer Chicano literature, it's Chicana Chicano literature, because we have, and I think this has always been true, but our best writers are Chicanas. The Chicana poets, the Chicana novelists are just superb. And there's a whole tradition of Chicanas writing our literature. And then you got men writing. Chicano literature, Chicana literature today is a wonderful, rich resource for people who want to read, just read good literature. People think that Chicano literature means the nationalistic identity stuff, that it was characterized by Yo Soy Chicano and that type of thing. But there are some really fine writers out there who have discovered heart and souls and write about heart and soul instead of writing about the surface issues of cultura.
The celebration of Latino writers and writing, which will be held March 31st at Don Chente Restaurant at 1248 South Figueroa Street in downtown L.A., is being organized by Abel Salas, who publishes a monthly magazine about art and literature called Brooklyn and Boyle. He tells me the event is open to the public, and he says it won't be a stodgy poetry reading. Not at all. It's intended to be a festive party.
There's nothing wrong with celebrating in style or giving it our literature its due and letting the world know that it does hold its own next to or alongside any other of the world literature that we would encounter.
Very good. So you do an extended invitation?
I would love to extend an invitation to anyone to join us.
The evening of Latino literature and music will be held March 31st in conjunction with the National Convention of the Association of Writers and Writing Programs. For more information, you can go to brooklynandboyle.com. For Arts Alive, I'm Luis Torres.
Now, here's Gail Eichenthal with another musical mystery for Dean Rob Kudieta of the USC Thornton School of Music.
Dean Rob, great to see you.
It's great to see you, Gail.
Our question today comes from Dr. Daniel, who wants to know, it's very poetic, what makes an adagio an adagio?
It's a beautiful question. Sounds like a setup for a joke, actually. we've talked over the years on doing this show that so often the simplest of questions really isn't, and that the simplest of question has a long, complicated answer. So here's a simple question, but it doesn't fall in that category. It really has a very simple answer. The adagio, it's a term that's used for a piece of music that's slow. And if you think back to some of the things we've talked about naming and names used for symphonies and movements and how they really structure larger pieces, to hold a large piece together, they'd build them off dance forms. So there was a dance suite. Then we got into symphonies and there would be movements. And this was really a way first to talk about the relationships between the movements. So you'd have a fast movement, you'd have a slow movement, you'd have a fast movement. That was a very basic design. That's what we'd call it. Well, we wouldn't use the word slow because they weren't speaking English when they were doing that. They'd use the Italian word. So that really is what it amounted to. There's no specific form or something that is an adagio. That word is used beyond the symphony, though. For example, adagio for strings, everyone's favorite, is really an adagio. It's a slow piece for strings is the way you can interpret that. So there's nothing hidden here. It really is a functional word, but it also describes that here is the slow movement or here's the slow part, and usually implies very expressive, but that really nothing beyond that. So there's nothing that makes an adagio, except that it's played adagio.
Is there a metronome marking limit to adagio?
Oh,
where
there
it
probably
becomes
is.
A tiny bit more allegro.
Oh, sure. because all of those tempo markings are certainly open to interpretation, and you'll hear people taking an adagio too fast or an adagio too slow because it certainly is a matter of interpretation, and there is a very, very large range. But I've never seen anybody take it so fast that they've had it change the title in the program with an asterisk, or he thought it was an adagio, but I don't agree. Nothing like that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dean Rob.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for Dean Rob Kudieta and his team of experts? Send an email to askthedean@kusc.org. Again, that's askthedean@kusc.org. You can also submit a question on Twitter. We're at @ClassicalKUSC and just use the hashtag KUSCAskTheDean. Earlier on this morning's edition of Arts Alive, we heard from composer Andrew Norman. Let's hear a little bit of his music to close today's program. This is a piece called Music in Circles, and it's played by the ensemble Y Music. Music in Circles by Andrew Norman, a performance by the ensemble known as Why Music, here on Arts Alive on Classical KUSC. And that wraps up this edition of Arts Alive for this Saturday, the 26th of March. The technical director is Mark Hatwan. Kelsey McConnell is the executive producer. We had help this week from contributing reporter Luis Torres, KUSC's Gail Eichenthal, and Alan Chapman. Thanks also to Sheila Tepper. I'm Brian Lauritsen. Have a great weekend.